got it. Number one, Lewis Jones.
Welcome to The Sports Lounge with Big Lou. The son of a preacher man, born in Venice, California. He's a four-sport letterman. He lettered in football, lettered in track, lettered in baseball, and lettered in basketball. He's a three-time Rose Bowl contender with two Rose Bowl wins. He was awarded the LA City 3A Co-Player of the Year Award for football. He went to the University of Washington football team on a full scholarship. He dominated their game, starting as a strong safety outside linebacker. He has won three Pac-10 titles, two Rose Bowls, and a national championship in 1991. He had an undefeated season and a national championship in 1991. He is the founder of Holy Fit 310, trainer to the California Hollywood Elite. And now, your host, Big Lou
Jones. Watford for the win! Hey, everybody, guess what? You're not dreaming. This is not a glitch in the Matrix. It's me, the host of the Sports Lounge, Big Lou, right here on AM 1290 KZSB. It's the Santa Barbara News Press Radio. Man, I'm super excited today, and I'll tell you guys why. It's not because Christmas is right around the corner and I'm going to get holiday pay. I'm excited because the guest that I have in the lounge with me today is a MLB super stud, now super sports host on Sirius XM Radio. And ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together, not a golf clap, clap like you mean it. It's my man, Ryan Spielberg, here with us. And Ryan, first of all, thank you for taking time out of your busy day and schedule to join us here in the lounge. I'm excited to have you, man. How's things?
Things are good, man. Thanks for having me on. So what's funny about this, Bill Pintard, who is, you know, a legend in Santa Barbara, and there's some connections between Bill and myself and his son, Eric, who unfortunately passed away many years ago. Yes. From cancer. But like, Bill sent me a note last week. He's like, hey, do you want to do an interview with Big Lou out of Santa Barbara? I was like, hell yeah. Do something with Big Lou out of Santa Barbara. I was like, cause I mean, Santa Barbara, that's I don't want to say I'm defined by Santa Barbara,
sure,
but I reflect Santa Barbara in virtually everything I do.
Man, you know what? Then that means you're definitely a Cool Hand Luke type of cat. And life is what it is. We don't take it too serious. And if it gets too serious, we just have a sip of wine and let it roll off our back.
There you go.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. You know, Coach Pintard, obviously, I had the opportunity to interview and had Coach Pintard here in the lounge with us. An amazing individual. He exudes, you know, championships and winning and focus and drive. And obviously, one of the things that I asked him, and I'm going to ask you as well, from a player side of it, from working with Coach Pintard and playing with him, I find it amazing for a coach in college, especially, or dealing with college kids or on the minor league level, if you will, even on the professional level, how they are able to maintain consistent success in and out when the roster is always ever changing. Sometimes we'll have guys in the program for the full term, you know, four years. Sometimes we'll get those diamonds in the rough, if you will, that come in making noise right out the gate, and we lose them early on. Have you seen, just in your time, player, coach, broadcaster, what would you say is that unique variable for those coaches that are able to stick into a system, grow roots, and to continue that path of success as that roster continues to change?
I mean, you know this as an athlete yourself. It's communication skills. It's consistency. That's all it boils down to. I mean, there's no magic formula. Everybody's okay at X's and O's. Okay, like strategy of a sport. There's armchair quarterbacks that are like, oh, you should have done this. Well, you're probably right. But what separates good from bad is communication. I've always said I'd rather be, you know, tell it to my face, not behind my back. So if you ever hear me talk trash to you, I tell it straight to your face. Like, I don't hold back. I'll never talk trash behind your back. I actually joke around. I said, I'll stab you in the chest versus the back. And so I want you to see it coming. Right. And I think that is what separates great communicators. And when I look at Bill Pintard, or if I look at even an Andrew Checkitz or Bob Bronson, and people that have been, if you're looking at Santa Barbara, staples in our community, Fred Worker, longtime coach at Santa Barbara High School, Al Ferrer, longtime coach at UC Santa Barbara. You can say all you want about establishing clubhouse chemistry, about establishing culture. Culture is always defined by the people in the room. And so no matter what, like I could be a very good communicator, very good coach, and try to establish a great culture, but it's the people that I bring into the room that are constantly changing the culture. That's why I laugh at people that think you put a sign on the wall that says we play together and assume like, hey, look, we established this great culture. We have this sign on the wall. We're going to play together. It doesn't mean squat. It doesn't do anything. You know, it doesn't do anything. It's just a thing on the wall.
It's funny, just from my time of going up through sports from Little League, you know, pony ball, because, you know, I played all four sports, you know, growing up as well. The four major sports, I call it, but there's some debates about those four major sports would be nowadays. But I had those same blocks of wood hanging in the locker room. In terms of football, we'd have this pretty decent walk to get to the field. But when you walk through the gate to get on the field, there's another sign up there, like this big chunk of wood, and everybody's supposed to smack the wood. And it's just like, you know, leave no regrets on the field is what it was. And, you know, some guys are walking out onto the field with regrets and coming out with even more regrets. But at the end of the day, I like what you said. And it's that true variable is the culture is defined by the people in the locker room. And that culture continues because we continue to have the right people in the locker room, that right chemistry. And as you said, especially in sports, I've noticed it in the arts as well, in terms of dance, in the modeling world as well. It's very direct and upfront and in your face because there's a lot on the line, and they're not gonna tell you, yeah, you look great to your face, and then behind your back, they're gonna fire you. They're gonna tell you straight up front in front of everybody that's there, I'm sorry, you're too big. You need to go lose 3 pounds. And yeah. Some people, that crushes their heart and their soul, but at the end of the day, that's what it is.
As long as it's done out of love. I mean, that's the thing is, if you're doing it, I have arguments with coaches all the time.
Sure.
All the time. And like, I'll give you an example. There's all types of baseball YouTube coaches that are trying to teach a swing. They're teaching a swing. There's a difference between teaching a swing, which is like if I took you to a driving range as a golfer, teaching you a swing would be teaching you, like, I'm just going to teach you how to hit a club, a driver, and we're just going to hit it straight down the fairway. I'm teaching you a swing. I'm not teaching you how to golf. I'm teaching you how to hit the driver straight on a fairway. And if you listen to people that are really good at golf, like a Phil Mickelson or anybody like this, you'll say like a 150-yard shot might be with his pitching wedge. But if it's early in the morning, it might be with a 9-iron. I might have to make it move to the right, make it move to the left. It might be later on in the day where it's nice and warm. It might be a pitching wedge. I might have to have the ball below my feet, above my feet. That's golfing. That's not teaching a swing. And so when I'm talking to coaches and they have this idea of what they're going to teach a kid, I'm like, you're not teaching them the right fundamentals of what you're trying to produce. You're trying to produce a kid that learns how to hit. And so not everybody's exactly the same. And when you're able to teach out of love, and I can say, listen, I'm going to teach you how to do this, but it's going to be on your own terms. Everybody's different. So it's okay to be different. And I might be wrong here, but this is what I see. And I think out of love, because I want you to do as well as you possibly can. I'm not saying that you'll be a professional athlete or that you're going to make millions of dollars.
Absolutely. But
based on my knowledge and my love for you, I would like this is what I have that can make you better. And like, that's the biggest thing is that I'm seeing is so many coaches are stuck in this idea that it's my way or the highway, or that this is all I know. And so this is how you're going to do it. Right. And there's no wiggle room. And that's a big challenge for a lot of coaches, is because they only know bits and pieces, not the full spectrum of coaching.
You know, and again, well said. And you know, for myself, I've been mentoring, coaching, training. I've been in the fitness industry now for a little over 20 years. And I have that same take with all of my clients, the kids that I work with. I do little, I will say the new buzzword now since COVID has been pods. So I have these pods of kids that I train, sports specific, football being the niche. Then we'll delve over into baseball, depending upon where we are in that season. And, you know, I've had some kids, like you were saying early on, like I've been just very direct with them. Like, look, buddy, he's like, you know, Coach Willis, I want to play running back. I want to play DB and da 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 da. And I want to do this. I'm like, look, buddy, look, I've been working with you for a while. and we'll get there, but you're not ready for that right now.
Yeah.
What do you mean? I say, well, look, you're, 5'10" sophomore, and you're running a 4.9 40. It's not bad, but you have guys all the way across the country that are 6'1" that are running a 10.8 100 meters that can jump out the gym. And the difference between you and them, they commit to doing all the extra work. You have to go on vacation. You are tired. It's too cold. It's too hot. These guys are suiting up and they're going to get the work done. You want to have what others don't have. You got to be willing to do what others aren't willing to do to achieve those things. The essence of sports. Guys, listen, I got in the lounge with me, Ryan Spielberg, Colorado Rocky, Cleveland Indians, Texas Rangers, somewhat of a journeyman, but he's definitely the king of what he does and he enjoys what he's doing. I don't even know how I got so lucky to get him into the lounge. I want to send out a big shout out to Coach Bill Pintard of the Santa Barbara Foresters for helping put this together and reaching out to Ryan for us. I'm definitely in his debt. And I want to ask you, Ryan, are you, I know you're familiar with Tyler Gilbert. Again, he also played at UCSB. I believe he was at UCSB. And I just happened to, right before our first live show here on the lounge, it was the weekend where Tyler went out his first MLB start and pitched that no-no. My question to you is, who was the pitcher that you hated to face the most?
So it's funny. It's two part.
Oh,
early in this guy's career, Clayton Kershaw. I owned him. I'm telling you, I owned him. Like, he came into the big leagues in 2008, was a very, out of high school, really like good arm. I'm a bench type player. I would play against left-handed pitching. And so clearly Clayton's left-handed pitcher. So early in Clayton's career, he was fastball, an okay curveball and a changeup, and he was wild.
Yeah.
So like, facing him early on, I would spit on the changeup because it wasn't good enough. The curveball is okay unless you can spike it, which he couldn't.
Right.
And so it's basically, he had a good fastball that was inconsistent. So I would just hunt fastball and I laid into him. Like I had, he didn't have anything to get me out. He wasn't good enough. He just like, at the big league level, like I'm not saying like I'm a great player, but like I'm telling you, at the major league level, I know, like when you have somebody's number,
you got it.
I got you.
That's it.
I got
That's
you. It. You're done. Like, I don't care. Like, two strikes, I don't care. You might get me out once, but you're not going to get me out multiple times. I'm better than you.
Let me ask you, is it fair to say that how you feel about, you got him? Like, what's coming in. He's got in his bag of tricks, he's got four pitches of two we don't even account for. So he really got two pitches.
He's got one. At that point, he had one.
and knowing that, I guess what I'm asking is, that you got him and you got him on your dime. Do you think ever that pitcher might feel the same in the midst of that one-on-one battle, that the pitcher's thinking to himself, damn, he's got me? Like,
oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. The guys know when that person's got him. So here's what's crazy about it. Sandy Koufax was the one that started working with Clayton Kershaw with the curveball. So
I did not know that.
I kind of joke with Clayton because I've gotten a chance to know him over the last couple of years.
Sure.
I was like, dude, you're like baseball's golden child. It's not fair. Like, you have Koufax teaching you a curveball. And the great equalizer for Clayton Kershaw, it occurred in the offseason between 2008 and 2009. Rick Honeycutt, who is a longtime pitching coach for the Dodgers, yeah. And Honeycutt was a really good pitcher. Pitched for the Yankees. He pitched all around the big leagues. He was really good. He taught Clayton Kershaw a slider. Now, a slider from a lefty, especially at the time that he was starting to learn it, you'd see him. You'd see like an occasional slider, but most of the time, like as a right-hand hitter, it would be a backdoor slider. So they try to throw a slider down and away. And that's still, it's a good pitch, but it's more like a trick pitch.
Right.
The difference for Kershaw was that they moved his slider location. Instead of going backdoor slider, they went back foot slider. So for me, it would be basically you throw your slider from the middle portion of the plate and it would fall down to my back foot. So it was inside.
Yeah.
Well, why is this such a big deal? Because you couldn't see it. So I couldn't read spin anymore. So if I'm hunting you on the fastball, which is like, that was the pitch that I would be able to whale on him, I would see what looked like a fastball, but it was a slider. And I'll never forget it. I was in, it was like an April game in 2009, and I'm facing Kershaw, and he throws the back foot slider, and I swing straight through it. And I was like, oh crap. Like, what the hell is that? Because that's something he hadn't had before. And right. I knew, to your point, like when a hitter knows that they got the pitcher, does the pitcher know that the pitcher's about to get wailed on? Yes. That moment when I swung through over the top of his back foot slider, and then I was like, uh-oh, I knew, and he probably knew he had me from that point on.
That teeter changed a little bit, huh?
And it changed in the entire league. I wasn't the only one.
Wow.
Kershaw went on a historic run because of the back foot slider, because now he had a fastball that went with the slider that you couldn't see, and the rest is over. And now it's right. Now it's history.
Right.
And so like, so to your point, like the guy that I crushed the most was Kershaw. And then he became the one that I couldn't touch ever again. And he was the one I was like, stop making me face this guy just because I had good numbers early on. And that was the problem. Like you would look at my numbers and you go like, oh, Spilly's going to go hit Kershaw. I was like, no, I don't want to face him anymore because I can't get him. I can't get him. Like, I don't see it.
You know, one thing that I always talk about with younger guys as they go up through the ranks of playing, whether it's, you know, Pop Warner or Little League to high school to college, college to pro. With baseball, it's a little different in terms of what we use to help us be our best self on the field, on the diamond. With football, you know, if you're a receiver, you'll have a different quarterback throwing you the ball, but you can adjust a little bit differently. Obviously, right-handed versus left-handed quarterback, you're going to have different revolution on the ball of rolling right versus rolling left. From baseball, is it more difficult when you're coming out of college to pick up that release point from that pitcher in terms of a batter, that release point where he's letting that ball go? So you, the sooner we pick it up, the sooner we can catch it, the better chance we have of making contact on the ball. Do you find it's a more difficult transition going from being able to pick up that release point in college versus in the pros?
You know, it's funny you bring that part up because hitting is so much mechanics, it's timing, but it's eyesight, like having good eyesight. And I happen to have great eyesight. I mean, that was a separator for me, is that I could see the baseball pretty much out of your hand.
Right.
But along the way, I mean, it wasn't a straight shot for me. Like I played really well in high school. I set a bunch of records. I go to UCSB. I get redshirted as a freshman because I'm terrible. It's like, I know it sounds funny to say that. I'm not lying. I was bad. I only played in 12 games the first 2 years of my college career, but I could always see the baseball and I wasn't strong enough. And my mechanics of my swing was completely inconsistent.
Sure.
So it took a while for me to like get confidence and repeat my swing. But then once I had it, I mean, as you hear me talk about it, like there's not any lack of confidence here. And it was because my physical skill set, my ability to see a baseball allowed me. I knew like if I could see it, I was going to crush you. It was just staying on time. And if I wasn't on time, then I couldn't hit. But that was a separator. So no, like for me, because I had great eyesight going from college and to pros and continue to get better and better was just about mechanics of my swing. And that takes time. That takes a lot of hours.
It, you know, it doesn't, it's funny, you know, just many are called, but few are chosen, you know, and the chosen few are the ones who embrace putting in that extra work, that extra time, because they don't see it as work. They see it as a part of their passion and what they want to do. And that's, you know, I've even fired some clients in terms of training, strength and conditioning, because I enjoy what I do so much that it's not work. It's literally my passion. I was built to do that. And I let those people go. I say, look, you're making my passion become work. And not a lot of people enjoy work. They go to work because they have to. That's what life requires of us. But at the end of the day, when we're fortunate enough to have our passion as our career, I'm not going to let you take that joy from me. Listen, guys, we're in the lounge today. It's in the Sports Lounge. I'm the host, Big Lou, right here on AM 1290 KZSB, Santa Barbara News Press Radio. My guest in the lounge with me, don't worry, he's got his shoes off and feet up as well. Bartender's over there mixing us up some margaritas. Ryan Spielberg. Spielberg currently hosts, or co-hosts, I should say, with CJ Nikowski, The Loud Outs, the program that airs Saturdays on Sirius XM's MLB Network Radio. He's in the lounge with us right now. We do have to take a break. That's how we pay the bills around here. So don't turn the dial. Just turn it up. We'll be right back. Sit tight. Yeah, he's in the lounge right now. He took time out of his busy day. It's Ryan Spielborg, currently the co-host with CJ Nikowski on the Loud Outs program that airs on Saturdays on Sirius XM's MLB Network Radio. I got him in the lounge. We're just chopping shop, guys. He's got his shoes off. I got mine off, too. Don't worry. We're not playing footsies. We're just having some margaritas chilling. Don't change the dial. You're listening to the Sports Lounge on AM 1290 KZSB, Santa Barbara News Press Radio. We'll be right back.
Perfect. And that was a great recording. Okay, great. We'll replace that. Okay, you can come back anytime. You got 10 minutes on this next one.
Okay, cool. I'm ready when you are, Dizzle. Count it now.
3, 2, 1, you're live.
Hey, everyone, we're back. We're back to the Sports Lounge right here on AM 1290 KZSB, Santa Barbara News Press Radio. I'm hanging out with my host in the lounge, my co-host today, my guest, Ryan Spielborg, baseball phenom, Colorado Rockies, Cleveland Indians, Texas Rangers. He's a golf enthusiast, sounds like. We were chopping shop and we were using some golf references. So, Ryan, let me ask you this real quick. You know, I'm excited to be, I guess, the only sports show here out of KZSB AM 1290 here in Santa Barbara. And I know we do have a golf show here as well. And I asked the golf guys once, so I'm going to ask you as well. I'm just curious as your opinion on it. Golf, is it a hobby? Is it a sport? Is it a hobby that's a sport?
No, that's not a hobby, man. That's a sport. I mean, I look at Formula One as a sport. I mean, there's a lot of... When I think about golf, I remember I had a hitting coach when I was in AAA, and he was like, "Spilly, you should take up golf." And I was like, "Why?" He was like, "Well, there's a lot of fundamentals of a baseball swing that you can get in a golf and playing golf." And not only that, I mean, it's if you walk the course or if you go through it. I mean, like, no two rounds of golf is ever the same. It could be a different time of day. It could be where the hole placement is. It's a grind, and like, there's times where baseball. You know, being able to think about, can I pull my hands in? Can I change the shot of my swing? Can I, you know, from a pitcher standpoint, there's a lot of mental aspects. So I don't look at golf as a hobby. It certainly is a sport. And when I think about the swing of golf, like a baseball swing, I might have 3 to 4 different swings in my bag, right? Like I might have a 2-strike swing. Right. I might have a swing that I'm trying to pull the baseball, get it in the air. Hit the ball on the ground. Like I might have 4 or 5 different swings.
Sure.
In golf, when you think about it, chipping, driving, hooking it, hitting one low. I mean, there's, if you ask a golfer, like a good golfer, there's probably 20 different swings out of the sand, maybe out of water. So like golf has so many different swings and techniques that if you don't look at it as a sport, I think you're missing it.
You know, I'm going to say this right now, and I'm going to throw myself under the bus. I like throwing myself under the bus because the more I do it, it doesn't leave room for anybody else to do it because they already know. With that being said, I'm going to say thank you to you for that breakdown of golf. And I will tell you, I was one of those guys who was, I wasn't fully committed, but I was definitely probably about 70-30. Okay. Golf was not a sport. Golf was not a sport. And part of my rationale, if you will, was I would tell people, and I would get into this debate sometimes, say, well, listen, guys, it's not hard to hit a ball that's not moving. Now, where the ball goes, that's a whole nother topic of conversation. But I promise you right now, a lot of people say, well, Lewis, can you play golf? Well, can I play golf is another question, but can I hit a ball that's not moving? You damn straight. But when you break it down to those little fine nuances of the game, the different swings, and there's so many other things that come into play with those swings, your grip. And in terms of golf, I'm going to repeat something that I've heard. I don't know it to really be true, but the face of your club is open or closed, which in my head, as I translate that into baseball terms, you know, now we're talking about that front foot. Do I have more of a closed stance or an open stance? So I'm not a golfer by any means. I've tried the miniature golf thing. I got mad. They kicked me out. I threw my club.
That's a hobby.
I broke the windmill. They sued me for it. It was a mess. So it's something that I'm definitely going to pick up, when I can't get in the gym and move that iron anymore. But let's have some fun right now, Spilly. If I'm okay to call you Spilly, I know.
If I get called Ryan or anything else other than Spilly, I'm usually in trouble. So Spilly's
got it. Got it. Okay, well, I'm going to stick to Spilly. That means that for those of you who don't know, I am now a part of the cool crowd, okay? So let's get into this. I have these little games and stuff. I like to play a little bit of trivia out there as well. And I'm going to ask you this, just a couple questions here just to kind of show the other side of Spilly for our listeners and followers. And for those who are going to probably see this on MLB Radio or hear this on MLB Radio, if we're lucky enough to get it out there, let's start with number one. Favorite place to play? When you are out there doing it, what was your favorite place to play at?
San Francisco.
Really?
I've gone to 100 Dodger games as a kid. My mom was the one that signed me up for baseball. She had Fernando from Fernando Mania. She was a Guatemalan immigrant. So like the Dodgers were our team. But playing in San Francisco in the years that I was a Rocky, we had a nice rivalry against the Giants. And that place was awesome. You go to left field and you'd always hear like, what's the matter with Spielborgs? And it's like the entire outfield will yell, he's a bum. So you can hear that even now. Like you go and you watch it. Like the Giants fans are just, they're great fans. That's a tough environment to play in. So I loved it. That was my favorite place during my time frame. I think now as a broadcaster traveling around, Dodger Stadium's awesome, of course, because it's 50,000 a night.
Right.
But going to Wrigley Field, it's the worst broadcast booth. It's so small.
Really?
It's terrible. But that environment is amazing. Like, that's an amazing environment. Like, any of the old school stadiums, you'd be surprised. Like, Colorado Rockies Stadium is the third oldest in the National League.
Is it? I did not know that. See, yep. for those of you who are listening and following and watching the show and listen to the show, this is part of the reason why I do this, to learn some things.
Yeah.
It's okay to not know everything. And I know that I don't know everything. And I'm excited to have learned that right there. That's awesome. Let's see. Let's try this. We already answered that. Well, let's try it this way. I want to say you already answered this question because you kind of told me about Clayton Kershaw. But favorite pitcher to bat against? Would that have been Clayton? Was that your favorite?
No, not my favorite. Jamie Moyer was my favorite. Jamie Moyer threw like 82 miles an hour.
So BP.
So, yeah, he was, everybody else had trouble with him because they had much better bat speed than I had. So 82 is like perfect. So I love facing Jamie Moyer. He was one of those guys, again, like I say it, and like didn't have anything to get me out. And I knew it. And he knew it.
That's amazing. For those of you listening, when he say that 82 miles an hour, we love that for my baseball friends and fans out there, they'll understand what I say. It's just like some soft toss. So we're doing a little pepper right there. That's the relationship of that right there. So I get that as well. Side note, I'm going to pause on the questions for a second. You'll get a kick out of this. In high school, I played, I ran track. I played baseball, football, basketball. And it was my senior year. So 1989-90 season year. And we just got to the first round of the playoffs. We're playing Kennedy High School. And I should have started pitching that game. I did not. I'm still mad at the coach for it. Here we are all these years later. But Garrett Anderson was on this team.
Oh, nice.
And Garrett Anderson at one point in time was dubbed to have one of the sweetest swings in baseball.
Yeah, over 2,500 hits. Yeah, he had over 2,500 hits.
Same as King Griffey Jr. as well. He had one of the best swings in baseball when he was doing it in that era. But Garrett Anderson, they finally bring me in. The game is close. Our starting pitcher is starting to get shelled, so they pull him out. They finally bring me in to save the day. I get through that first inning when I come in. And then that next thing I come up and there's like two guys on. I get the first out. I get the next out. And then here comes Garrett Anderson. And I don't know him from Adam at that time, But, you know, he's still a pretty tall kid. Like, we were both pretty big kids in high school at that time. And long story short, I work him to a full count. And I get him to foul one off. Boop, he fouls one off. Still 3-2. I foul him off another one. Boop. And I tell you, I feel like when you're telling a story about Clayton Kershaw, I feel like he just had my number on that series. And I hung a 3-2 curveball, and I just didn't have enough snap on it. And I got to tell you, Spilly, I think it's still flying from 1989-90 right now. It's still taking flight. I'm Big Lou, the host of the Sports Lounge. We're going to take another quick break. We will be right back.
I want to stay south of the river with the chains and the gold. Out here together, but you have places to go. Watching the sunshine lace the gray. I don't know why you wouldn't stay. You should come south of the river, where the loving is gold.
Guys, we're back. This is not a bad rewind. This is not a boomerang. We are back. It's me, Big Lou, the host of the Sports Lounge. I'm sitting here with Ryan Spilly Spielborg in the lounge. Took some time out of his day today to join us. Very excited to have him here. Moving on to the next question. What do you think about instant replay in the MLB?
Hate it. It's trash. The trash rule. It's not the spirit of the rule. I've watched this. I say it as a broadcaster all the time. Like, somebody will get caught stealing and he comes off the bag for like 1/100th of a frame. And I'm like, that's a BS rule, because that's not the integrity of the sport. That's not like a guy slides off, beats the tag with his oven mitt, and then he's, they hold the tag on him and he comes right off for like a hair and he's out. I was like, no, that's not the same. He beat the throw. So I think it's a waste of time. I think there are some plays where you can look at it, but certainly like stolen bases and instant replay is just worthless. That one, you could throw it in the trash. Throw that one in the trash.
Would you say then, because I hear you in terms of the essence of the game itself and the integrity of the game, we want to leave it to, I think I want to say the term that I recall hearing was human error. Like, we want to leave it to the game to be human. Would it have more of a place on only plays at home?
No, I mean, like, there's not as many plays at home as you would think over the course of the season. I mean, like, I'm fine with certain aspects of it. Fair or foul. You want to look at a close play at first base. Like, that's, I'm okay with a instant replay at first base. But if you just start limiting it to, like, to me, it's, and even at home plate, you know, like, how do you differentiate between second base and home plate? Especially for a run, we get it in the NFL, right? Like, all scoring plays are reviewable. So I get it. Like, you score a run, you want to make sure that the guy's safer out. But first base, I would much rather have replay at first. I don't want to see stolen bases being challenged anymore. That's like the one spot where I think it's worthless.
Got it. That's coming from a real pro, ladies and gentlemen. This is not just my opinion sitting here watching TV and just yelling at the screen because I am the greatest fan of the sport, so I know all the rules. No, this is coming from a guy that has been there. He's still there, and he's an analyst for MLB, guys. Going up, one more question for you here, Spilly, and then we're going to get into a little quick version of who did it. But we'll do that part when we come back from the break. Last question for you. Let me see. I got a whole bunch down here, but I think I want to go with this one. How has the game changed today versus when you were playing?
It's more athletic. The athletes are better and they're stronger and they're faster. And like, there's different aspects about the game that's improved. I mean, basically there are some people that don't like the game, because we're seeing more. We call them true outcomes: a walk, a strikeout, a home run. The three true outcomes of baseball. It's also a byproduct of how the sport has looked at talent and how they've evaluated it. They want these great athletes, these showcase athletes that, you know, hit the ball 500 feet. They fly. They do all this stuff. But you miss, like, I've not, if you met me in person or saw me as an athlete, I could run, I could throw, I could hit, but I would never wow you. I would never wow you. I, like, if it was a pageant contest, I would not win. Like, I wouldn't win. I would lose to these other athletes. So, but we've seen athletes acquiring more skill set and technique. But overall, the athletes in Major League Baseball are better. So expect it to be, you know, the ball going faster and secondary pitches are a little bit sharper. I do believe over time, though, we're going to go backwards and you'll see a couple more players like me that had contact and, you know, might not be the biggest, fastest, strongest on the field, but I could play. So we'll see what happens. But that's the thing. I mean, you see it in the NBA, you see it in the NFL, like the athletes today are much better than they were 10 years ago.
Listen, I can tell you right now, I ran that gambit playing football, and I got to tell you, I played against some of the best. I played with some of the best, and, you know, being so many years now removed from the game and seeing where the game has grown, as physical as I like to be, I don't want no part of any of that anymore. I like being able to get up in the morning and not have to go to treatment or sit in the ice bath. And for those of you who don't know, it's one thing to take an ice pack and put it on a hamstring, a quad, your back, your sciatic is a little out of the way. And it's another thing to go sit in an ice bath. I have no passion to do that anymore. Guys, look, we do have to take another quick break. We do got to pay some bills. But I'm sitting in the lounge with Ryan Spilly Spielberg, SiriusXM's co-host with CJ Nikowski on Loud Outs program that airs on Saturdays on SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio. I'm Big Lou, the host of the Sports Lounge. We're going to take another quick break. We will be right back.
Should make her my baby lady, lady. Shake some on my. Maybe I should say the things I type online. Be like, baby. No, I can't. Yes, I can. Wait, I said, I can feel it. You feel it. We feel it. I know she want me. Girl, you never let ya.
We're back. This is not a bad rewind. This is not a boomerang. We are back. It's me, Big Lou, the host of the Sports Lounge. I'm sitting here with Ryan Spilly Spielberg in the lounge. Took some time out of his day today to join us. Very excited to have him here. And Spilly, real quick, what do you have for us? What's going on with you and MLB Network and your sites and charities and stuff? Tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, so I've been doing a lot of broadcasting. You can catch me on AT&T Sportsnet during Rockies season. You'll hear me as the color analyst, which is fun. But I'm on 5 days a week on SiriusXM, basically the afternoon drive show. And even though there's a lockout right now, we're getting into Hall of Fame discussions. We've been chatting with some of the biggest names in the sport daily. So it's been fun. It's basically, if it's California time, it's 11 to 2 every day on MLB Network Radio. And so you'll hear me chatting about baseball.
Awesome. Guys, tune in. Don't miss the conversation. Sometimes information is key, and we got to ask all the right questions to get the right answers. Sometimes you don't like the answers you're getting. It's probably because you're asking the wrong questions. Look, you know what? We're running out of time, guys. I know Spilly has a lot going on today, but I do want to end our day with our segment of Who Did It? It's real quick. It'll take maybe a minute at the most, unless you have to think too in-depth about your answer, Spilly. So we're going to jump right into it for you. Pitcher with the most strikeouts in a single game is?
Roger Clemens. Was it, or is it Max Scherzer now? I think it's Max Scherzer. Was it 20? Yeah, 20 is the record.
I don't even like playing this game with him no more, guys. You got two of the three, so it's a three-way tie. Max Scherzer, Roger Clemens. Can you guess the third?
Another one that got 20. I don't think it was Randy Johnson. I can't remember the third one.
Kerry Wood.
You know, he almost had the greatest game of all time if it wasn't for an error. He had an error in that. There was a swinging bunt for a hit. Otherwise, that would have been the greatest.
That
would have been the greatest. It would have been a no-hitter with 20 strikeouts. It would have been the greatest game pitched in the history of baseball.
That's a tough one to choke down. Next one. Let's see. What player has hit a home run from both sides of the plate in the same game?
Both sides of the plate in the same game? Guess is like Eddie Murray. Let's see who else has done it.
Guy is on point. It is Eddie Murray, absolutely. Los Angeles Dodger, and he did it June 9th of 1990. Amazingly enough, that's when I graduated high school and was about to set foot on University of Washington campus for my first year of University of Washington football. And my last question here for you, Spilly, the wave that's done at all sporting events everywhere, and so it's done at some churches now, apparently, but it's definitely a huge thing at baseball games as well. Where did the wave start? Where was the wave started at? This is a trick question now.
My guess is the Astrodome back in the day. Like, it feels like it was a Houston Astros gimmick thing. That or something that...
I can see that the Houston Astrodome, like, you know, back in the day when the Bad News Bears, and they went to go play that little final game at the Astrodome, and all the fans were like, let them play.
Was it Shea Stadium? Was it a Mets game?
There's a glitch in the matrix. It was really at my alma mater, the University of Washington in Seattle.
Okay. All right.
that's how I'm giving my University of Washington some love, some light. But the wave was originated on Halloween, October 31st of 1981 at the University of Washington. And it was against Stanford. Those are my questions that I have for you, Spilly. Hey, everyone, listen, we had Ryan Spilly Spielberg in the lounge with us today. His favorite drink is a daiquiri with whipped cream on top.
I'm a neat tequila guy, and I'm good.
Oh, I love it. That's, you know what? I'm a neat anything type guy, except I've never had a beer in my life and I've never had champagne. We'll get into those reasons as to why at another date. Maybe I can share those reasons with you if I'm lucky enough to come on your show, and spend some time with you guys. Listen, guys, Ryan Spilly Spielberg, thank you for joining us here in the Sports Lounge today. It was a pleasure, man. Definitely learned a lot from you. He definitely knows his stuff, ladies and gentlemen. So if you have any questions, concerns, complaints, make sure you listen to Spilly's show. Again, he is the co-host with CJ Nikowski on Loud Outs, the program that airs Saturdays on SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio. He's on every day, 11 to 2.
11 to 2. Yep.
11 to 2. Make sure you tune in, guys, and give him a shout out. Call in. I'm sure he'd probably love to at least just chop shop with you guys. That's what a sports enthusiast do. We love to talk sports every day, all day. There's never a dull day about it. Again, Spilly, thank you for joining us.
You got it, Big Lou.
That's it. Hey, guys, you have been listening to the Sports Lounge on AM 1290, KZSB, Santa Barbara News Press Radio. I'm your host, Big Lou. We'll see you next week.
Big Lou's experiences, trainings, and passion for sports and fitness have thrust him into the world of personal training and strength and conditioning. Lou has been a personal trainer for over 20 years, helping people, kids, young athletes, and adults achieve their fitness goals and exceed them. It's his goal, his passion. You can find Big Lou on Instagram and Facebook at FitLou310 and at TSL Big Lou. Big Lou's handle on Instagram is at HolyFit310. Book your training session with Big Lou at holyfit310.com. Or to book your appointment with Big Lou, call 323-304-7339. That's 323-304-7339.
Check out his fitness videos and interviews on YouTube at HolyFit310 and at TSL Big Lou. To listen to the podcast with Big Lou's Sports Lounge original music soundtracks, search with your smart speaker of choice and say, "Play the Sports Lounge with Big Lou" latest episode. The Sports Lounge with Big Lou is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud, Google, Radio Nation, Burberry, and Spreaker. Please subscribe, everyone. The Sports Lounge with Big Lou is brought to you by Evolve Entertainment and HolyFit 310. The Sports Lounge with Big Lou is executive produced by Lewis Jones and Jeremiah Higgins. The Sports Lounge with Big Lou, master sound engineer, Dr. D, a.k.a. Richard Dugan. A big thanks to our station manager, Les Carroll, for letting us play around with his radio station toys and his radio waves. Thanks, Les. We promise we won't break them. The Sports Lounge with Big Lou. Be good. And be sure to go to tslbiglou.com.